Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Hi there. I'm so excited for you to hear this week's podcast. It's actually a new series that we're doing called Waste 360's Unpacking Recycling with Charlotte. And she has been answering these interesting, sometimes funny, sometimes difficult, often complex questions on Twitter about recycling. And it made me realize maybe we could all benefit from this and spread the word on exactly what is recyclable, what isn't, and help our own industry at the end of the day. So please give a listen. Hope you like the new series. It'll be a variation of video, podcast, written word, but I think you'll enjoy it. It's a new energy that we're bringing to Waste 360. So please give a listen and let us know. Thanks and have a great day. Hi, everyone. This is Liz Bothwell from Waste 360 with Charlotte Drysen. And thanks for joining this new weekly episode. We're calling it Waste 360's Unpacking Recycling with Charlotte. And the reason we're doing this is, who isn't confused by recycling these days? What materials go where? Can local MRFs handle this? What's the real story behind EPR? And don't get us started on RIC codes, right, Charlotte?
Yeah, we could be talking for hours about those, without a doubt.
So this new series will answer this and so much more. So bring your questions and you'll learn a ton. And we're really going to demystify recycling one episode at a time with Charlotte, because she's been answering questions like this on Twitter and in her daily life for a long time. So she's ready to share her experience with you. And Charlotte, can you just give a quick background on yourself before we get started?
Absolutely. And couldn't agree more. It brings me so much joy to answer recycling questions, large or small, wherever they might come from. I'm so really eager for the conversation we're going to have today and questions from folks that get the chance to tune in with us. But I most recently worked with the Office of Waste Diversion at DC's Department of Public Works, managing recycling programs and leading some policy initiatives over there. Before that, I was with the Sustainable Packaging Coalition as a project manager and designed recyclability and compostability education for brands and retailers and manufacturers, and led the Compost Collaborative over there. So really had the opportunity to learn a ton about the technical packaging considerations and how that relates to infrastructure and all of the above. So it's been a real pleasure to kind of support on the private side during my time at the Sustainable Packaging Coalition, and on the public side with the DC government.
Excellent. And we're thrilled to have you. And for background, we found Charlotte on Twitter, and she has been answering the hardest and most interesting questions there for people. And it's been enlightening for sure. And today we'll be talking all about paper and paper recycling. And so, Charlotte, as materials go, paper is the most recycled item in the U.S., right?
It is. It's the material that we generate the most of, and that makes up the biggest slice of the pie that we're recycling today. And I really love how you put it there in terms of the Twitter conversations, that it's been so illuminating for me too, because I think by and large, the majority of questions I get relate to paper and paper recycling, and how do you recycle it, whether it's shredded paper or a cardboard box? Can you do it with tape? Do you have to remove staples? You name it. There's a lot of interest and confusion about it, and people want to do the right thing, and they often just don't know how or aren't getting as specific enough guidance as would be useful to them. But certainly, I think it really is all grounded in the fact that the majority of packages and items, especially during the pandemic when folks are ordering in groceries and lots of e-commerce shipments, just folks have so much more paper coming through their doors than I think they ever have in the past.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, that's a great place to start. I mean, what you've gotten a ton of questions from everything from pizza boxes to wrapping paper and everything in between. But talk to me about what you think has been happening since the pandemic and how the stream has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think certainly we're seeing more and more paper than ever before, more cardboard than ever before. Pizza boxes are such a great one. I think for whatever reason, this is really like a flashbulb item for folks. Pizza boxes are heavily very able to be recycled, really high quality fiber. And unfortunately, a lot of municipalities discourage the recycling of them, even though paper mills want them and can take them and can process them, no matter the grease that's a part of it. So that's something that's really resonated with folks that I've had conversations with and has been so exciting to see more of, loose and unbagged in blue bins here in DC and elsewhere from the community online. I think one of the things that's a little tricky for folks to think through is exactly where a material is too contaminated to recycle. And pizza boxes, you know, just inherently having a good bit of cheese and grease can kind of be the archetype of that, the most iconic example of that. But I think the best way to think about it is, you know, pizza boxes are recyclable. Pizza isn't. So you want to be making sure you're taking out all of the food and not leaving any extra food in there. But the grease and residue that remains is totally fine and not a problem to process. And it's been really heartening to see some industry data coming out in the past year or so demonstrating that more than 90% of paper mills can process them and don't have an issue with them. And I really hope that if a municipality doesn't currently encourage and specify and call out pizza boxes as a recyclable item, that they consider doing so, since I think a lot of that anxiety just comes from that food waste element. And it's really important. We don't want to be introducing contamination, especially with rodent concerns. I know I probably don't have to tell you, but for all those that have spent time in a recycling facility or at a transfer station, it's very understandable why someone would be wanting to mitigate the presence of food waste and moisture. It's unfortunately all too common of a phenomenon, but it's such high quality material. And knowing that paper can be recycled 5 to 7 times before the fiber lengths get shorter and shorter and shorter and too fatigued and tired to be recycled, that this is some of the highest quality material and paper out there. So we really want all of that material that we can get, especially with all of that increased demand that we're seeing during COVID. And I think that kind of prompts people to start thinking through all of the kind of extra qualifiers about what can and can't be recycled well. So for instance, a lot of folks are really confused by tape on cardboard boxes. So here's an example of some paper tape, not vinyl tape, which is preferable for recyclability, which has been really exciting to see on more and more packages. Amazon in particular has rolled that out across cardboard boxes pretty robustly. But it's important for folks, I think, to know that, you know, not only do we want to recycle cardboard boxes, but that tape is not a problematic contaminant, that it's easy for paper mills to pull out. It's nothing that they have to painstakingly go through and remove from boxes in order to recycle them, but they're certainly welcome to. It's so funny to me. Every time this question gets asked, I usually get a couple of comments where folks are saying, like, well, that's great, but I'm still going to take the tape off. And that's wonderful. I mean, that's reducing contamination costs and reducing the effort paper mills have to spend to get that out of the system. You know, I always kind of say, like, extra recycling brownie points if you want to do it, but don't feel like you have to, especially if you're moving and have oodles of boxes, or it's the holidays and you have tons of boxes that you're unwrapping. It's definitely not a must have. It's just a nice to have. Same thing with the paper labels that, you know, shipping boxes, containers might have. And same goes for staples, really. You know, that's something that's easy for paper mills to pull out of the system. What gets to be really challenging is polyethylene plastic coating, since that gets gummy and kind of, you know, like an adhesive that's really challenging to pull out. So that's why something like an ice cream tub wouldn't be considered recyclable, because it has that PE coating on both sides that renders it just too challenging for a paper mill to be able to pull out and deal with, without a doubt. But there's lots of packages that are in between. So something like a carton, that can be confusing for a lot of folks, especially knowing there's been such dynamic change in recyclability of that packaging format in the past 10 to 15 years. It's been really exciting to see that is a really great example of manufacturers coming together and funding and creating infrastructure for a packaging type. So something like a carton back in the early 2000s wouldn't have been recyclable. The mix of plastic layers and paper layers and sometimes aluminum as well was just too challenging to be pulled apart and sorted at recycling facilities. But we're really excited to see that increasingly, and now more than 60% of communities in America can recycle cartons and create a dedicated bale for them and get them to a specialized facility that can process them. So it is admittedly really hard to guide folks when it's not necessarily very intuitive that, you know, an ice cream tub with two layers of plastic coating isn't recyclable, but there's an exception for cartons. But it's something that we're definitely seeing people do better and better. In DC, for instance, we have residential homes, both single family and multifamily, recycling just over half of cartons today, which is way better than the business sector is doing. So we're definitely starting to see people kind of latch on to that notion and do an increasingly better job and attach the caps when they see them, without a doubt.
Oh, that's great. And I know you tweeted something this morning about the cartons getting a little wet. Do you think our MRFs enjoy the wet cartons? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh my gosh, I get such vicarious anxiety for recycling facilities and transfer stations and crews that are out there collecting paper items during inclement weather. It always saddens me to walk down the block and see people putting out cardboard outside of their bins when it's raining or snowing or anywhere in between. Unfortunately, wet cardboard and wet paper just isn't recyclable. It can't be sorted effectively. If recycling facilities, which I'm sure I'm going to use jargon and refer to as MRFs at some point, but if you aren't already familiar with the term, material recovery facility, MRF, pronounced MRF, is what we call them in industry. And unfortunately, when paper and cardboard gets wet, it can't flow up the first piece of equipment at MRFs, which is called a star screen. And that basically floats up paper and cardboard and enables it to be separated. So that's usually separated before any other kind of material. And once it's wet, it just is compromised. And usually when it gets compacted into a truck, it'll kind of get mushed and won't hold that flat 2D shape that recycling facilities count on to be able to sort it well. And one thing I think that's really tough for folks to wrap their head around is that, you know, they know, I think, instinctively that when paper gets recycled, it does get wet in the pulping process. So I think for folks, people just think, you know, maybe it's even helping the process, that it's, you know, they're one step ahead when paper gets wet en route to a recycling facility and don't quite realize that the issue is in that middle stage of sorting. So definitely, you know, folks in most areas can set out cardboard outside of their blue bin and break it down into a flat shape, which of course we want for sorting. But when it's raining or snowing or, you know, whatnot, we just want to make sure it's all inside of the bin, or you keep it inside until the next collection day you have when the skies are clear, since we just don't want to be introducing water into the system where we don't have to be. Unfortunately, you do see every once in a while really wet loads coming in of what would be great quality recyclables, and if they are just too wet past a certain threshold, they might have to get redirected to landfill. So anything we can do to mitigate that is definitely a great thing.
Oh, that's great. And you were talking about how the multifamilies are doing a great job with this. Is there anything else you think businesses can do to sort of, you know, increase their quantity of recycling paper and go from there?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's such a great one. And we definitely see as a common thread in here in DC, where I am, as well as nationwide in big cities and small towns, that businesses typically don't do as good of a job recycling material as residential homes in general. It varies based on material and packaging format for sure. We're glad that cardboard is a material, and some paper items are items that businesses definitely collect better than others and in pretty high proportions. So that's really exciting to see, since that's high quality material that we have great domestic demand for. But businesses, I think, could do a much better job of providing signage in the back of house as well as the front of house to make sure that material gets sorted correctly. Even if it's getting collected in a single stream format, sometimes it can be helpful to break out collection bins for different items and specifically call out, you know, put all paper and cardboard here, all containers, plastics, glass, metals in here. Even if it's going to go to the same recycling facility, we do see reduction in contamination when you have that more granular branding and outreach and signage. Definitely something that could be improved upon, but without a doubt, increased education and iteratively too with employees and staff is so important. And to make sure that you're not only doing that with the employees at your business, but also the patrons who might be coming in and out of your business is really an important thing. And it's really helpful to be consistent. So in most places, you'll have a kind of consistent list of materials that businesses as well as people need to recycle. And in DC, we have the same here. So someone should be able to be, you know, putting cardboard, paper items, cartons into their blue bin at home, as well as into a business's receptacle. So sometimes we see folks having, you know, those shaped lids on top of a recycling bin at a restaurant, you know, so maybe you could only put in an aluminum can or a plastic bottle. And I think I definitely appreciate where that's coming from. You know, you don't want to allow folks to put anything into the recycling bin. We want to be, you know, cautious about contamination. But just last night, I was at a neighborhood spot a couple blocks from me and got a pizza with a couple friends. And the top of the recycling bin didn't allow us to put the cardboard pizza box inside of it. So I was kind of like the crazy person who was trying to break it down and smush it into like a long flat shape so I could jam it through. And a staff member had kindly came over and saved me and took it to the big recycling container in the back. But it just goes to show that, you know, if you don't necessarily know that's what a business is able to accept and you're being told by the shape on the top of a receptacle that it's not the right material to go in there, you might just toss it into the trash. And that's definitely, I think, it comes from a good place, but we definitely want to be as thoughtful as we can in encouraging all recyclable materials to get into a recycling bin.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great advice too. And then I know you often talk about things that aren't recyclable. Is there anything in the paper world that people would be surprised isn't recyclable?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that first and foremost, the questions that I get the most that people are, I feel a little bit badly because I feel like I'm almost bursting a bubble when talking about this, but receipts are one item that unfortunately we don't want to accept in the paper recycling stream. Unfortunately, they have BPA coating on them. That's not a material that we want to be introducing into the recycled paper supply. There's some really great work that happens iteratively to ensure to test pulp and test recycled paperboard to make sure that it's high quality and safe for food contact and doesn't have those harmful materials in them, but receipts are definitely one that just because of that chemical composition we want to avoid putting in, and that's something that folks definitely I think aren't aware of, you know, quite so much. And for sure, I don't have one handy, but a CVS receipt, if you've ever gotten the 8-foot receipts that they provide, they have recycling, you know, Mobius loops, recycling symbols every 6 inches on them. So I don't blame people for thinking they're recyclable. You know, they're getting a lot of messaging that they can go into a recycling bin, whether it's on the receipt itself or in a lot of signage and education that's out there. But that's one example of a material that definitely we want to keep out of the bin wherever possible. Really exciting to start seeing some legislation be introduced and considered in New York City and some other places about requiring receipts to be just like utensils and straws in some places to have to ask for one to receive one, or to at least have the option to get an electronic receipt, or, you know, to stop making that the default option. Not only from that perspective that it's not recyclable, but of course we want to be reducing material where we can. So if you don't have to have it, you know, we don't want to be giving people it if they don't need it. But there's definitely some other items, especially those with PFAS, which is an acronym that stands for perfluorinated substances, anything basically that is a similar composition as what's used in Teflon. It's a really phenomenal grease and moisture barrier. It's the best grease and moisture barrier we basically ever produced as humankind. It's really good at what it does. And unfortunately, it has a lot of really harmful impacts to human health and environmental health. It's bioaccumulative and carcinogenic and harmful to lots of human systems. And unfortunately, because it's such a good grease and moisture barrier, it's used in a lot of packaging applications where, you know, you have moist food products or greasy food products. So something like a pizza box might in fact have PFAS. There's definitely much more awareness in industry and movement towards using PFAS-free alternatives. And one thing that's really phenomenal about compostable packaging is that the North American compostable packaging standard that we have, sort of certification program, building off the standards that we have at ASTM, has introduced additional testing requirements to test compostable paper items for PFAS, since we don't want to be introducing that into the recycled paper stream. We don't want to be introducing that into composting programs where people are creating high quality soil amendments to reintroduce into agriculture and other applications. So it's something to be wary of for food products. You can basically avoid it if you're purchasing a compostable paper item, but definitely something to be mindful of. And one of the kind of iconic examples to keep in mind there that I use when talking about PFAS with folks is a popcorn bag. So a microwave paper popcorn bag that I adore. I'm like the biggest popcorn junkie that's out there. It's my total kryptonite. But you know, that packaging format's going to have a ton of PFAS in it. So what's important if you're touching receipts or touching that kind of packaging format, always wanting to be washing your hands and making sure it's not getting into the recycled paper supply. So put it into the trash instead of a blue bin, for sure. But the third item I think that comes to mind for me for paper items that aren't so recyclable is shredded paper or just small paper items in general. So, you know, receipts are kind of, I guess a little over 2 inches wide, typically pretty long, but anything that's smaller than the size of a Post-it, more or less, 2 inches by 2 inches, is something that would be too small for the recycling facilities that we have in the US to be able to sort the material effectively. So when we think about floating up that first piece of equipment called a star screen at a MRF, at a recycling facility, if it's not of a certain size, it's just gonna fall through the equipment. The recycling facility was just designed for the size of most consumer packaged good items. So something like shredded paper would be way too small. And basically, whenever you see a load of recycling being dumped onto a conveyor belt at a recycling facility, if there's a lot of shredded paper, it totally turns into confetti. It's just like, you know, it's really festive. It's totally a party atmosphere, but definitely nothing that can get recycled. So the workaround for that I walk folks through is that you can put shredded paper or other small paper items, for instance, into a paper bag and then staple it shut. So we want to make sure that it's fully closed so it doesn't kind of fall open and let the shredded paper out. And staples, of course, because they're an item that paper mills can remove easily, won't compromise the recyclability of the paper in there. So a lot of cities and municipalities have shredded paper services that are, you know, dedicated once a month or maybe once a week if you're lucky. But if you can't get to one of those, I have a tough time doing it without a car personally. That's one way that you can take an unrecyclable paper item and make it recyclable.
I love that. And I love your tip with the 2x2 and showing the Post-it. It makes it real for people exactly what that size is.
It's handy to keep in mind, something that's easy to remember, I think, at least.
It really is. And I want to end our conversation about your most interesting Twitter question that you've received around paper.
I definitely think that receipts are some of the most thought-provoking ones, or the ones that get the biggest, boldest reactions. But I think the most interesting question, and one of the things I think that's been so exciting about talking with people on Twitter, is that, you know, now having had these conversations with people for the better part of a year, you know, folks are really expanding their foundational knowledge and starting to make connections about, you know, like, you know, I know that staples aren't problematic, but what about other metal attachments, or, you know, like thinking about like an aluminum foil package with the metal prong teeth, and are starting to kind of connect the dots across different areas. So I think my favorite paper question that I've gotten is whether paper items are all compostable. And it's a really good one. I think people are increasingly, you know, they feel confident in recycling and they want to branch out into composting food waste and other organic items and paper, and are really curious whether composting is better than recycling if an item can be both recycled or composted. So that, I think, is a really exciting question. And I think what's important to keep in mind is that many paper items are compostable, not all. So if it's something that has a plastic coating like a coffee cup on one side, or, you know, a carton where there's mixed materials as a whole, you know, that's not something we would want to be composted. For a paper item to be compostable, it either has to be uncoated, can't have any plastic coating whatsoever, or we want it to have a plastic compostable coating. So something like PLA, polylactic acid, that is a compostable item. And those packaging structures, we really want to be going through BPI certification and being tested to the relevant ASTM standards, so we can make sure that they're going to break down in the right amount of time for a composter's process. Or we want to make sure that it's an uncoated paper item like a napkin or a tissue or a coffee filter that, you know, is uncoated and definitely, you know, wouldn't really be having any super funky dyes or adhesives or anything that would compromise the compostability. So I think that's helpful for folks to keep in mind. And then I think that it's a default assumption that composting is preferable. You know, it's a natural process. It's building soil amendments, which is really important. But I think what's most helpful to walk people through is that, you know, it's a good thing to either compost or recycle. And if you could do either for something like a paper item, we want to recycle it first, since that preserves all the embodied carbon and all of the energy and water and, you know, all of the material that went into creating it from the first point. When you compost something, you take it back down to the soil level, and it's a really important product that we need more of. We're losing soil at a rapid rate, worldwide, in the US as well. Lots of important uses for it. But to get back to that stage where you're going through a tree farm, you're creating paper, milling paper, creating the packaging that you might otherwise recycle, there's a lot of embodied carbon and embodied energy in that process. So composting is phenomenal. We want to compost all the products we can. If they can be recycled, though, we want to direct it to that stream first. So I think that's been an exciting question that's come up a couple times and is really wonderful to see people making the connections with.
Oh, I love that. I love that they're making the connections, and I think they are. And I think we can dive deeper into that in another session too.
Yeah, oh gosh, so much to unpack there. And whether something could be composted at a commercial scale facility or a home composting operation or somewhere in between, yeah, there's a million nuances that would be really wonderful to dive into.
Well, I'm so thrilled you could join us, and I'm so happy about this new series. I think it's not only going to help people to understand what's recyclable and what's not, we're going to dig into more materials, and it, at the end of the day, will help our industry to really learn what people know and help educate, because at the end of the day, it will affect what people put into the stream and ultimately the end market. So it's great.
I couldn't agree more. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today talking about all things paper, and so excited to kick off the series and unpack recycling together. It definitely is a real treat.
Okay, we'll talk next week, Charlotte. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you for listening. It would mean the world if you would take a moment to rate or review this podcast. And if you share it with us on one of our social networks, we are giving out some fun Nothing Wasted podcast swag. So just tag us and see what you get. Thanks so much.